I'm Robert Siegel, and for the next 8 or 9 minutes, I'm joined by three of my colleagues for some analysis of the president's speech, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman, and NPR senior foreign editor Lauren Jenkins. And Mara, first for you. Reaction, this is a speech about Iraq. What did you think about it?
It was a speech about Iraq. I think it did exactly what the White House laid out in very detailed previews said it would do. He wants to push the reset button on Iraq. Lots of metaphors, turning the page, new chapter. This completes a transition to Iraqi responsibility. Now, in the president's mind, we are down to one hot war, Afghanistan, and the combat phase of Iraq is over. Certainly, our involvement in Iraq isn't. He left no mistake that the war was wrong. You know, he talked about all the terrible things the war had done. It threatened to tear the terrorism threatened to tear Iraq apart. Our unity at home was tested. Our relations abroad were strained. But he did talk about how the surge succeeded.
We changed tactics.
They block by block. They helped Iraq seize the chance. And when he talked about Afghanistan, what struck me was that he said, as with the surge in Iraq. In other words, it was a direct parallel. We're doing the same thing in Afghanistan to help them secure their own future. So a lot of continuity in the strategy. Although he didn't, once again, you know, give President Bush, his predecessor, any credit, and Republicans will have a field day with that.
But he did describe their phone conversation.
He did describe their phone conversation that they both were patriots, but didn't want to give him any credit for the surge.
Tom Bowman, a little reality check here. First of all, the end of the combat mission, a phrase of substance or a semantic distinction between what U.S. troops were doing a couple of months ago and now?
I would say it's all semantics. You still have 50,000 American troops on the ground there. They'll be in harm's way. They'll be patrolling with Iraqis. And a fair number will be on counterterrorism missions, going after al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. And it's important to note that the last four Americans who were killed in Iraq in the last few weeks all were killed by hostile fire. So I don't think there's a sense that in any way that for them the combat mission is over.
He said, and I quote, "Iraqi forces have taken the fight to al-Qaeda, removing much of its leadership in Iraqi-led operations." Fair?
Well, again, I mean, you clearly have Americans there training them, going along with them on missions, and they're there for a reason because Americans clearly are much more trained than the Iraqis. They've come a long way as far as a stable force, the Iraqis, but they still have a ways to go.
And a very important line, he said, consistent with our agreement with the Iraqi government, all U.S. troops will leave by the end of next year.
And no one I talk with at the Pentagon or elsewhere believes that. They think that it'll be renegotiated, the status of forces agreement, and that perhaps at the end of 2011, you may have 10,000, 15,000 or more American troops still in Iraq.
Lauren Jenkins, some other reality checks here. He spoke of, the president spoke of credible elections in Iraq and a caretaker administration that's there as they're waiting to form a government.
Exactly. I think that was sort of a cute phrase to call it a caretaker government. It's been 6 months after those elections. There is still no government. There's a total stalemate between all the factions that still exist and are still opposing each other. So there's no real government, and I think that's the big challenge for the future in Iraq. It can't move ahead. There can be no talk of success until something emerges.
The president drew the very strong connection between the drawdown of forces in Iraq, which he had promised in his campaign, and the new effort in Afghanistan. This is a key part of his entire administration's policy.
Absolutely. I think he basically said what's working in Iraq, what has worked to get us out of Iraq, we're going to apply on Afghanistan in the same way, that there are deadlines, that some troop withdrawals will begin, as stated, next year, and they'll depend, obviously, the speed with which they withdraw is the question that has not been answered, and how many actually remain there for the coming years is still to be known.
And 7.5 years since the beginning of the war in Iraq, the U.S. role in the greater Middle East, its position, is it remarkably different from what it was 7.5 years ago?
It's worse. It's worse. It's been tied down by two wars. There's talk of, in some quarters, there's talk of starting a third war against Iran because of its nuclear developments. And the Middle East peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, though new talks are starting tomorrow, doesn't seem to be going anywhere. There's no great hope that there's going to be a resolution there very quickly either.
Let me read to the three of you a quotation from 2002. I don't oppose all wars. What I'm opposed to is a dumb war. What I'm opposed to is a rash war. What I'm opposed to is the cynical attempt by some neoconservatives to shove their own ideological agendas down our throats. State Senator Barack Obama in an anti-war rally in Illinois. Mara, certainly the language describing the war today was not, it was not vitriolic in that sense.
No, it wasn't vitriolic. Although what's interesting is the flip side of that statement is when he said, I'm only opposed to stupid wars, he chose a war that he decided wasn't stupid, and that was Afghanistan. And some people thought that, that not only Obama's choice of that, but the Democratic Party's was a little bit cynical because they needed to have one good war so they wouldn't be looked at as McGovernite peaceniks. And now he's stuck with a situation in Afghanistan that some people think looks a lot like Iraq before it turned around. And he's now applying the same exactly the same lessons with the same personnel, the same general,
and I think
to fix
stuck,
it.
Tom Bowman, stuck yeah. is the right word, because he talks in his speech about the additional 30,000 troops he agreed to send over there will be there for, quote, a limited time. No one I talk with believes that. And the commandant of the Marine Corps, James Conway, said last week that he expects his Marines to be there for a few more years.
That would be a short period of time, actually, when you think about it. If they're only there a few more years, that would be a stunning success,
right?
As opposed to decades like Korea or something like that.
Well, I was over there in June and July in Afghanistan. I talked to everyone from Army captains to generals to Afghan police commanders to warlords and asked, how long will it take before the Afghans can take over the security responsibilities? The range was 3 years to 10 years.
I've been trying to think, Lauren Jenkins, about any precedent for someone who in this country ran critically of a war, think back to the Mexican War, and then actually became president during the actual progress of that war. I can't think of any precedent, actually.
I can't either. That. Obama may be the only one.
Remarkable situation to actually wind down the war, which is it's a measure perhaps of how long the war in Iraq has gone on, that you campaigned against 5 years or 8 years earlier.
But, you know, it's also remarkable that he didn't just pull the plug. In other words, he inherited the war and he continued it. It's not that he just came into office and said, okay, I oppose this war, we're going to get out. He was not the peacenik candidate that many people thought he was. He came into the war, came into office, and continued the same strategy and even applied it to Afghanistan, which I think he had a lot of ambivalence about once he got into office and understood the situation there, understood the limitations of Karzai as a partner, and he went ahead despite all of his doubts.
And I think he talked during the campaign about maybe a couple more brigades of U.S. troops in Afghanistan, which is roughly 8,000, 9,000.
Yeah.
He ended up sending a lot more than that.
A lot more than that. Tom Bowman and Lauren Jenkins, thanks to both of you. Mara, very briefly, since you've watched a few presidents now do a few speeches, as a speech from the Oval Office. Well done, fluent, stiff, what do you think?
I think it was fine. I don't think the Oval Office is his best venue. It's often not president's best venue. He doesn't seem to fill up the screen when he's sitting at that desk. But this was almost like a news report. He was marking an occasion and telling people that something has changed, and he accomplished his purpose.
NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson, thank you very much. This has been Special Live coverage of President Obama's address from the Oval Office on the formal end of the combat mission for U.S. forces in Iraq. I'm Robert Siegel.